just because it's not a physical mistake that you can see on a spreadsheet or in a printed piece of copy, it doesn't make it any less of a mistake or a learning. Somebody that I thought that I could trust, and it turned out that that was not the case. Because when the chips were down and something happened that affected that person, all of that rich history was pushed aside for that person to do something that benefited them.
This is Kirsty Carr, founder of Carly Consulting, specializing in marketing procurement, with a focus on creating strong, transparent, and transformational partnerships. Before this, she was the head of procurement at Müller UK and Ireland, the home of the iconic Müller Corner and Müller Lite yogurt brands. I'm Sonia, the host of the Plan B podcast. Here we talk about instances when Plan A didn't work out, how to pivot to get on with Plan B, and what learnings stay with us as part of the experience. I wanted to talk with Kirsty because of the journey she's been on around trust and boundaries in a professional work environment. While in other episodes we've been focusing on actions that might not have gone as planned, this time we'll be talking about emotions, how they drive us and provide us with essential pivot points in our lives, lessons learned on building professional relationships and how to define trust in a professional environment, and what learnings we can apply from elite athletes and their mindset in business. Welcome, Kirsty, to the Plan B podcast. How are you doing?
I am super, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
I am so pumped to have you on my podcast. I'm so honored as well. So for those who are listening in, I used to work with Kirsty in my first like full-time job. She was my procurement partner at the time. She was my partner in crime at the time. And she introduced me to the wonderful world of marketing procurement, which I'm sure she'd love to tell you more about. But yeah, Kirsty, can you just give you a little bit of an introduction about who you are, how you ended up on this podcast?
Certainly. So I am Kirsty Carr. I did work with Sonia for a long time, I think about 5 years in all, partner in crime, so funny. We did get up to quite a lot. Generally all good, I will say. Nothing to worry about. So I took the decision last year to set up my own business. Been in procurement, been in corporate for around 15 years. And I decided that the time was right, in the middle of a pandemic, to go out on my own. So I've been sort of on my own journey for the past 6 or 7 months, creating a business, cultivating a business, learning, growing. And Sonia and I have always stayed in touch. We're good friends. And when she said that she was going to be putting this podcast together to talk about, you know, Plan Bs and how we learn from mistakes, I was, really excited to be part of it, because I think we can all learn from our mistakes.
That is very, very true. And I think you have a really interesting view and mindset when it comes to mistakes. And we've previously discussed this. So do you want to tell a little about how you think about mistakes and how you think about Plan Bs?
So when we talk about mistakes, people often say failure. So to me, a failure is the end result. So a failure is what you actually deliver, whereas a mistake, or as I like to refer to it, a learning, is something that happens along the way to that result. And you can stop, acknowledge, recognize, change, and then move on. And the result is what you want it to be. So I think definitely for me, there's a very clear distinction that, you know, a mistake is something that can be changed, it can be fixed, it can be addressed. A failure is something where you have to do much more of a deep dive than to say, okay, so what went wrong along the way? And a failure is when you don't recognize that mistake. A mistake is when you do recognize it and you can do something about it before the end result. So that's the distinction that I would make about mistakes, learnings.
I think that's really interesting, because even I, before I did this podcast, I was sort of using them interchangeably. But I do think that the distinction that you just made is really important. Failure is, you know, the ultimate, you know, the end of whatever went wrong. But you can pivot along the way, right? So you could make a small mistake, pivot along the way, and turn it into a success. And
100%.
Exactly. And some of the stories that we're telling on here, you know, you wouldn't really think of them as full-on failures. They're more small mistakes that they made along the way, and then they pivoted and they turned it into success. And, you know, those are the mistakes that we can learn from, hopefully, for our path.
Yeah, definitely. That is, and it is the mindset. That's my mindset towards mistakes and learnings. And I view them all as an opportunity. Every mistake that you make is an opportunity to learn. It's an opportunity for you to tweak, change your formula, change your plan, change your goals, clear your mindset, go back in and try again, you know, and it's there for the taking. I definitely feel that it's not the mistake that actually matters. It's how you choose to then deal with that that is what will make that whole process a success or a failure. It's not always the actual little event. It's what you do after that, the actions that you take after that, that really matter.
Exactly. And we will talk about the learnings later on, that again, because I think we have loads of great examples of how we can take those opportunities and turn them around in the best way possible. But before we dive into that, usually when I ask people to come onto the podcast, I ask them to think about situations that they have been in that they want to talk about and that they want to sort of first explain how they got into that, because I feel a lot of us have been in similar situations and we don't always acknowledge them. We don't always think about them very deeply because we just try to avoid that feeling as much as possible, and we just move on to the next challenge. But can you tell us a little bit more about the situation that you want to talk about today?
Yeah, the things or the events that I learn the most from are always the ones that are sort of emotionally charged. So they generally involve other people. So it will be situations where you are working closely with somebody, or a situation where you go from being peer to peer to being leader to peer, or a situation where you are maybe promoted over somebody else that's in that same pool. And because emotions are really strong, emotions are at the heart of human beings, and it's what drives us, and it's what gives us the feelings. And sometimes it's those things that give you the most valuable lessons in life, because it makes you really, really look inwards on yourself. There isn't anything out there for you to go, well, there's a textbook on how I'm supposed to handle my feelings around something. You've really got to do the work yourself. So I'm going to touch on a couple of instances around sort of trust and boundaries that I think have taught me the most, and that I've brought forward along my sort of working journey.
I think on that one, it's a really interesting thing that we'll be talking about today, because in some of the other episodes, we've been talking about actions that people have taken that might have not been ideal at that moment in time. But some of the things we'll talk about today are really about how you basically take things on yourself and how you deal with things emotionally that could be mistakes and that might lead you down a wrong path. And negative self-talk and, you know, negativity in general is such a big topic that a lot of people deal with, especially at the moment with the pandemic and loads of other things going on. And so just having that view will be really, really interesting, I think.
Yeah, I think it's about giving yourself the capacity to be able to deal with that and to recognise that things that do happen, just because it's not a physical mistake that you can see on a spreadsheet or in a printed piece of copy or in a video that you put out or a piece of literature or whatever, it doesn't make it any less of a mistake or a learning, just because it's an emotive kind of sort of emotional intelligence piece. It doesn't make it any less valuable, because if you do the work and you recognize and you take the actions, which we'll talk about later, if you do that work for yourself, then you're going to address these things differently the next time they come up, and you're going to have the toolkit to be able to deal with that. And you wouldn't have that if you don't go through it in the first place. So yeah, I think it's equally as important to recognize that mistakes or opportunities to learn come in very, very different forms.
So do you want to tell me about the time when you had, missed, what did you say, trust and what was
trust,
the
yeah. Trust, yeah. Boundaries. It's trust and boundaries, really. They're interlinked. So I worked with somebody for numerous years. We basically had a professional relationship that spanned 10 years. Somebody that I thought that I could trust, and it turned out that that was not the case, because when the chips were down and something happened that affected that person, all of that rich history was pushed aside for that person to do something that benefited them, rather than thinking about our relationship as a whole. And that was really hard for me. It was really, I'm not going to go into detail about the actual event, but just to give you some kind of, to sort of set the picture. They behaved in a way that I just don't think represented the relationship that I felt that we had. And I then felt very foolish. I felt very naive. I felt that my trust had been completely misplaced. I then started to question my judgment of other people. I started to withdraw from a lot of people within my circle, because I then got into a very downward spiral of, well, I can't trust anybody. Everybody's out for their own. I'm never going to talk to that person again. I can't talk to that person about it. And it became quite, for a good 2 or 3 weeks, and I would say I was battle bruised. I was really battle bruised. It had a huge effect on my mental state at that time. That person was then removed from my circle, and I was no longer directly working with that person. And after I'd sort of licked my wounds, metaphorically, I started to think about, okay, how can I do things differently? How do I need to set up my professional relationships? What boundaries do I need to put in place? How do I know that I can trust somebody? Where do I pull? Where do I give more and pull back? And that has shaped how I form my professional relationships ever since, really. And I'm much more selective about the people that are in what I call my circle of trust. I'm much more selective about the people that I talk to about things. That was definitely the learning for me, is to never judge a book by its cover. Don't take people at their first word. You know, I'd love to come on here and say, yes, you should be open and trust everybody, but trust has to be earned, and it's a viable, tangible thing. And when you have been in a situation where that trust has been broken, and I think many people will have been in that situation personally or professionally, you could probably look back to something that's happened in your life and think, that was my emotional mistake or learning. But I feel that it was just such a valuable lesson to learn. It was such a valuable lesson to learn that not everybody creates relationships that are balanced. Not everybody creates working relationships that are balanced. Not everybody is in a relationship for the same reason. And you have to accept that, and you have to put the boundaries in place that address that, should you feel that that's crossing over into something that's not healthy or is not working anymore.
Can I just ask, because you said you had been in this professional, this relationship with this person for about 10 years. So did you ever actively think about trust and boundaries before this happened? Or what was your view towards trust and boundaries before this incident happened?
So, trust and boundaries. Before, it would be, okay, is that person a good, solid person? Can I depend on that person? Has that person kept my confidences? Do they put as much into this relationship as I do? Is it equal? Are they taking more than they give? Am I taking more than I give? Is this relationship emotionally draining? Because I have a theory on that as well. sometimes people sit in two camps. So they're either very radiating, so they give warmth and they provide comfort and they provide the things that you need, or they're very draining, so they're a drain and they take everything out of it. So it depends how you want your relationships to be. But generally speaking, I always go by gut instinct. So if I like somebody, I like the personality, we've worked well together, we seem to be on the same page, things that we don't agree on, we have healthy adult conversations about, there's no judgment, that is a healthy relationship. You know, you can talk to them about anything. And I never really thought about it until this person broke that trust that I obviously was a natural thing for me. And then I had to really think about, actually, I need to safeguard much more moving forward.
And when you were, you know, when you went into that sort of phase of analyzing, I guess, when you were licking your wounds, as you said.
Yeah.
Did you realize in your post analysis that there were warning signs along the way? Did you think, oh, okay, you know, now seeing them in a different light, I should have been able to maybe see this before it happened?
In this particular instance, no. No, it really just was completely, it was a real out of the blue. I was sideswiped, effectively. And I think that's why it hit me so hard, because I hadn't seen any signs that made me think any less, or that this person was capable of, you know, abusing our trust. When I did the post-analysis, I think what I realised was the actions that this person took actually was nothing to do with me. It was nothing to do with the way that our relationship had been. It wasn't about me. There was obviously something that for that person at that time made them take that course of action. Now, I'll never know what that is. I have never asked. I don't want to know. Because, again, I'm not responsible for somebody else's behaviour. I'm only responsible for mine. And, again, that was another post-analysis lesson learned. You just can't account for the things that people do that surprise you sometimes. You don't know what's going on in their world emotionally or physically, mentally. And my post-analysis was, I don't want to find out. I now need to go into full protection mode of myself, and I need to think about how I manage all of my other professional relationships. And if I need to make changes, that's what I'm going to do. And that is essentially what I did to, you know, that was my plan. So this has happened. I don't want this to happen again. I need to look at my circle of trust. I need to make sure that the people that are in it deserve to be there, that it's a two-way relationship, that I can trust them. And I need to act accordingly. But that took it wasn't a short process. It took, I would say, probably well over 3 months to get to that point of being okay.
I think there's another interesting thing you said there, which is you can hold yourself accountable for other people's actions. So if something happens, you know, if that person chooses to do something, you can't say, oh, okay, they will have done that to harm me or to put me in a weird situation. They will have done it for their own reasons. And you don't always know those reasons. And you can't, and you also shouldn't reflect those reasons onto you, because they might be completely independent of you. There might be 1,000 other things going on. And so putting yourself in sort of that way of the projectile that is about to hit is really self-harm in a sense, right? Because you're basically putting yourself in harm's way and you're projecting
you
that.
You are making yourself responsible.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're making yourself responsible for that other person. So you would get to that point where you are then trying to fix everything that's gone on for them to try and understand why they've done something. And then if you use all your energy doing that, then you've got no energy left for you to work on yourself and how it's made you feel and what you're going to do for you to not allow that to happen again. And that really, in an issue of trust or misplaced trust, that's got to be the key. It's got to be about what you do. You cannot think about why did that person do that. You have to start from a point of, okay, they've done that. How does that affect me? What am I going to do about that? because otherwise you wouldn't move forward. You'd be constantly thinking about, okay, oh, why did they do that? And how can I help them? And sometimes, as harsh as it may sound, you have to take a step back from that and go, actually, it's not about them anymore. It's about the damage that's been done to me, and I need to look after me, and I need to have a plan, and I need to feel I'm not going to make this mistake again with other people.
Yeah. So actually, this is a great transition into learning. So we already touched on a couple of things here. But you clearly went into this sort of phase of post-analysis and you reevaluated how you think about trust and boundaries. And I know that you have been taking quite a lot of inspiration from athletes, for example, because we used to work a lot Absolutely. With athletes and with like pro athletes that, you know, go to Olympics, go to big championships, are under a lot of pressure. And when it comes to these sort of sports or type of sports, you know, it's a pretty level playing field. You know, everybody can run fast, everybody can jump long distances, but it's really the mental game that makes a huge difference in those sort of disciplines. So can you tell me a little bit more about that and how you applied that?
Yeah, so if we take sports people, so as you said, you and I have been lucky enough to be around a number of elite athletes. And what I love about their mindset is that their mindset is, okay, well, I didn't get the result that I wanted this time. So I'm going to go and I'm going to go and I'm going to go and I'm going to go again and again and again and again to shave off that millimeter, to add that millimeter to my javelin throw or whatever their discipline is. And we're talking like really tiny margins, and they put the same amount of effort into going again, addressing it, being positive, taking it all as an opportunity. And they put that, you know, I don't know, 25 hours of training a week into getting that millisecond off their time, because their attitude is, okay, it didn't go as I wanted it to. I'd like to do better. So I'm going to do X, Y, and Z in my training plan, and I'm going to get the results that I want. And it's just such a positive mind space to be in. And it's so driven by that whole growth mindset, that whole attitude of everything's an opportunity. I can do anything that I put my mind to it. Effort and attitude is what brings results. Feedback is a gift, which is something that you will have heard me say a million times in our working time together. You know, feedback's a gift. Somebody's taken that time to actually come to you and say, this bit was great. This bit I think you can work on. This bit I don't think adds any value, but it's done in a way where you grow and you learn from it. So I think feedback is definitely a gift. I'll try anything. I'll try new things. I'll try anything that gets me to that goal that I'm trying to achieve. And what I love about that is they learn from their journey. They're not just learning from the results. They go back and, they've got trainers and coaches and nutritionists. They've got all those people around them that are looking at all of the steps along the way to make those minute adjustments for them to get that really great result at the end. And I think it's so powerful. And I think it just goes to show that if you open up your mind to that kind of growth mindset possibilities, the way that you will then handle things will be very, very different to if you stay into that very closed negativity of, we all know when we start doing something new, we can get frustrated. We can definitely think, oh, I can't do this. I'm frustrated. I'll leave it. You and I have talked about this many times. I hate technology. It's not something that I'm a lover of at all. However, in my journey, in my business, it's something that I'm teaching myself and I'm committed to teaching myself and I'm doing the work. Do I enjoy it? I can't say I'm there at the moment. Can I see why I need to do it? Can I see how I'm improving? Yes, I can, because I have decided that although it's not my zone of genius, I actually need it for me to do my work. So I need to learn how to do it. So I've switched that into, yeah, I don't like it, into a, I don't like it, but I know that I need it. So this is my plan. So that's just a very basic example. But if you're in a very fixed mindset, you know yourself, you'll get frustrated, you'll quit things, you don't want to try anything, you don't get involved. I mean, I just don't see where that benefits you as a human being, because human beings intrinsically love to learn. So
no, that's true.
You know, the whole point is to drive yourself forward and to learn and to experience new things and to get excited by that. So bringing it back to learnings and mistakes, I definitely feel the value of learning is how you approach that learning. Maybe it's how you decide to take what's happened, let it sit with you for a while. Because if we talk about emotional things, you do need to let it sit, because you need to lean into how it's making you feel, because you need to address how it's making you feel. You need to understand the pain points that that's causing for you, because that will tell you where you need to do the work. So it's okay to sit and lean into it for a little while. I don't advocate wallowing in self-pity. I don't think that does anybody any good. But I do advocate leaning into it and allowing yourself to feel the feelings so that you recognize them. Because that strength of feeling will stay with you. And if it's something that is uncomfortable, you will not want to feel it again. So that is your first learning. You want to know what that feels like, because you don't want to be there again. And then it's about accepting that it's happened, acknowledging that it's happened, and putting a plan into action, and then making those small behavioural changes to protect yourself, but not necessarily cut yourself off from everything. It's about rebuilding. Mm-hmm. It would be very harsh to have one situation happen and then tar everybody else by the same brush. But you still got to do that piece in the middle where you protect yourself, you protect your energy, but you have the boundaries. The boundaries are really important. And you then go again, you reset.
How do you...
It's really...
When we talk about trust and boundaries, what is your renewed approach to trust and boundaries, would you say? How are you dealing with it differently now than you did before the incident?
I have very clear boundaries now. So it's almost like a three strikes and you're out policy. Everyone can make mistakes. Absolutely everybody can. All of those things happen in life. We accept that. For me, it's a demonstration. And if I get a gut feeling that somebody's perhaps not behaving in a way that I want them to, or they don't share my values. So I've done so much work and you know, this incident happened years ago, but I've done so much work, and even in the last 6 months alone, on my own values and the way that I want to be seen, the things that matter to me. And the boundaries are, I want people in my life that have the same kind of energy, that have the same kind of values. And if I don't think somebody is a fit for me anymore, I don't get involved. I don't engage. I can keep it very professional without needing to build any kind of relationship other than a professional one. But I think that comes with age, maturity, experience, and actually having an incident happen that makes you actually aware that not everybody behaves in the way that you would like them to.
Yeah. And that's very true. And I think that has happened to all of us, right? We've always, especially at the beginning of our careers, I mean, I know from personal experience, you open yourself up to people. You try and show vulnerability, and you basically pretend that you can be best friends with everyone almost. And then you are in situations where it just turns out that it was not how you, your view of things was very different to what the reality was, especially in a professional
it's
environment.
It's like when you start school, isn't it?
It's when you
like
start
if
school.
You start
yeah.
school. You want to be everybody's friend. You want everybody to like you. Those things are really important to you when you're younger or when you join something new, because it's all about wanting to fit in and be accepted and all of that. And yes, you will make relationships and you will have relationships, whatever form that relationship is, that aren't any good for you. And it takes you a while to get to that point where you think, actually, I'm not getting anything out of that relationship. That person was in it for their own means, not as a... But we all fall into it. I've just said, like with maturity and age and stuff, you learn. But it's not to say that that won't happen again. If it did happen again for me, now I'd like to think that I would recognise the signs and I would be able to nip that in the bud and very much be, that's not happening again. Because I've been through that and I recognise and I'm aware. And I'm aware of the feelings that go with that. And sometimes your feelings can be the best indicator of what's going on. It's like your barometer, isn't it? Of, is this right? Is this wrong? How's this making me feel? And trust, you know, trusting yourself, that's a big learning. If you do find yourself in a situation where trust is broken, the learning is trusting yourself again. You have to be able to trust your own judgment. It's just because one thing, and it goes back to what I said, you're not accountable for somebody else's behaviour. That is another learning of that. Just because something's happened again, don't take it as a reflection that everything that you've done so far is wrong.
And I think there's another one, which is as you mature and as you gain experiences, you also realize that you need different things from relationships than, you know, when you started, when you were younger. When you're younger, you want acceptance. You want to be liked by everyone. You want to be maybe admired. You want to be seen as something. You want to portray something. Whereas I feel as we go through life and as we gain experiences, I'm trying to avoid the word through age or through time, because I do think, you know, young people can...
No, it's be, experience.
Exactly.
It's,
they can be very mature with this, but the reality is that relationships nowadays, they need to at least provide me with different things than they did, you know, 5-10 years ago. When I have a professional or a personal relationship with someone, I don't go to have approval. I don't need approval as part of that relationship. I value honesty. I value feedback. I value support, you know, when I'm having tough times. Those are things that I didn't necessarily value in relationships when I was younger. They were seen as weaknesses. They were seen as, you know, sort of secondary things that come with a good friendship. But actually, the more you learn about relationships and friendships, the more you realize that they're actually the most important thing about relationships and friendships.
I honestly couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. And I definitely think it is experience. It's nothing to do with age or time. You're right. It's experiences. You appreciate. I think the more in tune you become to your own values, the more likely you are to create friendships and professional relationships and relationships with people that you know share 90% of those values, because you will naturally be drawn towards those people who demonstrate those attributes rather than somebody you just think, oh, they're cool, I want to hang out with them. And I think that's so true. When you're younger, when you're less experienced, I think there's very much a, when I look back to my sort of beginning of my career in procurement, I felt very much like I didn't know what I was doing. So the plan was to just be in that job and then move on. And I felt very much like I didn't know what I was doing. So I would have said I was very much in a fixed mindset then. I can't do this. I'm frustrated. I'm no good. But the bravado side of me would have been fronting that out, trotting into work every day, having all these conversations with people, because it's like a survival mechanism almost, that you just go, okay, well, I'm feeling this here, but I'm not going to tell anybody I'm feeling like that, because I don't want anybody to know that I'm absolutely petrified inside, that I'm doing a really rubbish job. But experience and those boundary settings and that value piece, you know that, you know, people that are with you, people that are truly in your circle of trust, are there to support and guide and offer feedback, and will do with nothing but honesty and a sense of wanting you to achieve what it is that you're trying to achieve with no hidden agenda. And that's a real gift. But I do definitely think, so you sometimes have to go through the mill and learn that for you to appreciate it the other end.
Completely agree. So if you had to give one piece of advice to our listeners, what would it be?
So my advice would be, in terms of learnings and opportunities and mistakes and whatever you want to call them, whatever label you see fit to give them, My advice would be, unless you acknowledge and take accountability for whatever's happened, you won't move forward from it. So that would be my first piece of advice, is to acknowledge that it's happened, take that step back, let it settle, absorb how it makes you feel, and then put a plan together and move forward. Don't dwell on it. Think about the things that you can do differently. Don't keep looking backwards. That would be my biggest piece of advice. You know, you can grow from anything. It just takes you to continually look forward rather than backwards.
I love that. Almost thinking of it as if you have an armor, whenever these things happen, it highlights a little kink in your armor. And
absolutely.
Without the situation happening, you wouldn't have seen it. You wouldn't have been aware of it. But now that you know it's there, you can address it. And that's the beauty of that's the beauty when things don't work out as planned. You are being put on a new path, and you get a new learning from it and a new learning opportunity.
Absolutely. It's a gift. It's a gift, and it's up to you what you choose to do with it.
Very much so. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Kirsty, today. It has been...
Thank you so much for having me.
It has been an absolute pleasure. If you guys are interested to learn more about Plan B or situations where a Plan B is required, please subscribe to my podcast, and I'll see you at the next episode.